back. This is the Renaissance, episode 132, Leonardo part something. Welcome back, Papa Bear. How are you?
Doing okay. People around me are not doing as well. Kiki's been exposed multiple times to COVID students. We always get the phone call, a voicemail at the end of each day. So we're like, okay, Kiki almost got COVID again. How do you feel? Fine. Fuck it, you're fine. But we did get an email last night going from the school that said, we might be unable to provide your daughter with bus ride to or from school for the rest of the calendar year. I'm like, oh, what? How in the fuck does that? So as you could probably guess, the bus drivers in this country are paid shit, especially in small counties like this are paid less than shit. I don't know what that is. I bet Leo did. But people are quitting. They can't find anybody else. There's no benefits. And so unless I jump on a bus, which would be pretty badass, I might have to drive her for the rest of the year. So that's my life in a nutshell. COVID, and now I'm a chaperone. So, yeah.
You know,
what about you? Yeah.
In this country, we all drive our kids to school, so I don't feel sorry for you. We don't have school buses.
Right. Well, we live in a big area that's scattered out, so.
We have regular buses that kids can get on to get to school and trains and that kind of thing.
I saw a taxi the other day, which I think he was lost. We don't have taxis here. We have one red light. We're pretty proud of it. Yeah.
How long's the drive from your place to Kiki's school?
Fortunately, we live literally 5 minutes from the school. So for me, it's doable. But for everybody else, it's going to suck. But here's the thing. Because we're used to schools, we have exactly two entrances right next to each other to the school. So now suddenly picture hundreds of cars all trying to pull in and leave at the same time. I'm like, did you assholes not think this through? I mean, you're going to have to start school at noon because not everybody's going to be able to get to the parking lot. So it's going to be a clusterfuck, but it's beyond my, it's 2021, right? I mean, that's the way things are. So just fucking go with it.
Yeah, but that's how schools are here. Like, I don't see what the problem is.
We're not built for around the block. Right.
We live near a school, the school that my older boys went to, primary school. It's just around the corner from our... And there's, you know, every afternoon, cars lined up around the block, down the street, parents walking kids backwards and forwards, cars backed up. That's just the way it's done.
Well, picture a school on a hill and there's nothing around it. I mean, it's literally woods because, you know, cows and trees. And two lanes going in and out. So... bottleneck, I think is. I don't know if Leo
invented
it. If it's
5 minutes away, why doesn't she just walk?
We're going to have that conversation after tonight's show. I wanted to save it for after because I didn't want to come on here with my ass busted, my lip bleeding, and a black eye, and my toupee askew. Yeah. So no, we're going to have that conversation. You got a bicycle? You got a riding lawnmower?
Yeah.
Don't wake me up! Don't you fucking wake me up! So we'll see how it goes. But that's my life.
And in the winter, just a dog sled.
We got Finn. We have sled. So I think this is going to work out. It's character building. Character building.
What would Leonardo do?
Yeah. Oh, he'd fucking invent a mechanical dog. Fuck, I don't know. But I guess we'll find
out. Let's talk about Leonardo's love of machines today, Ray. He loved machines and not just. Right. Ones for anal pleasure either, like all sorts of machines.
That was a bonus. And so I'm not sure if I have my timeline right, but I kind of went back and I was looking at the previous shows. So I think right near the end or when there's going to be an end in the horse monument that he's working on, or he's kind of getting it where he's digging this big pit. And he's also working on and off the study of birds in flight. He's also decided to let his imagination run away with him. When it comes to mechanical things, this guy cannot stop. He's studying everything at once, and he absolutely probably loves the chaos and the daily schedule that his life is. Except for if you hire him for something, you better be prepared to wait.
He can't. He won't. He don't stop. I think part of his obsession with machines is that he wanted to build a flying machine. That was
good point.
Part that was, of it. He needed to figure it out how it worked. And he was fascinated with machines more broadly because he was fascinated with motion. He wanted to really understand how things worked how energy mm-hmm. was transferred through gears, levers, wheels, pulleys in bodies, whether it's human bodies or birds, through mm-hmm. from the heart through to the muscles, through to the sinews. Wasn't enough for Leonardo just to go, well, it works. He needed to understand
that's a rare
how it works.
Point of view. Yeah.
Other Renaissance artists drew machines, but only Leo drew them part by part. When you go through his codexes, you see pages and pages and pages of components of machines. You see the machine and then it's broken down into components. He's trying to understand or explain if somebody might be looking at them in the future, how they work. Now, of course, I am in the future, and I have spent the last week looking at his machine drawings, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at them broken down part by part. And what I came to understand is I don't understand fucking anything that's going on in his pictures. It might help if it wasn't written in Italian and B, written backwards in Italian.
Yes. But still.
But even then, and I am learning Italian, but he's like scribbly, scribbly writing. And
yeah, you're looking proper at these, Italian. Yeah.
I'm looking at these machines going, I really wish I, you know, had an engineer co-host.
To appreciate.
Somebody who could explain something to, how these things work. Because I got no idea what's going on in these machines. Right. Do you? Do you have any more skill? No.
Now, I will grant myself this. As you were saying a second ago, other artists would draw things, but they would draw them completely intact, not transparent, nothing's labeled or described, and so it's just there, which absolutely, it's like, here's an Archimedes screw. Yeah, that's fucking helping me in no way because I can't see inside of it. I don't see how it works. And you're right. He's the one who's going to break it down, draw the individual pieces, draw what's inside of it. So if we can't understand his drawings, we're screwed because that was as good as it got. In fact, he's the new standard, between now and then. No, then and now. That's how things are going to be labeled and diagrammed so people can understand it. Again, he makes another amazing transfer technology by drawing them transparent and in pieces so we can understand them. We should get an engineer on board.
Yeah, we should.
Don't you know anybody?
Oh, look, I've got
my mate
Ian, who's an ex-podcaster, mm-hmm. former podcaster. He's a...
I couldn't cut it. Let's talk about
that. He's a tool maker. And
he's a real tool.
I keep thinking I should get him on. He'd be able to go, that's a flim-flam... Juggy bugger. I use those all the time in the workshop.
Yes, right.
Now, all of the scholars, when they talk about Leonardo and these drawings, what they say is that Leonardo drew as a tool for thinking. He had to, in order to understand something, he needed to draw it. I'm a bit similar. In order to understand something, I need to lick it. That's my skill.
Lick it, learn it, love it. Got it. That's my motto.
And if I can't lick it, because I think
it's not worth
with my taste buds. That's how I work.
Yeah, you have highly developed taste buds, right?
I get a new Apple device. Yeah. I'm picking up my first ever Apple Watch tomorrow. I bought an Apple Watch.
Nice.
First thing I'm going to do is lick it.
It stops
anyone else touching it. And B. that's how I appreciate things, as you well know.
Which pairs well with the way I learn. I rub my penis on it. So again, not in the Apple store, but I'm sorry, you were saying. I'm sorry.
Well, he thought by drawing. Now, this kind of reminds me of Nikola Tesla. I just read his autobiography recently.
Sure.
But Nikola Tesla went one step better than Leonardo. He said he visualized machines by building them part by part in his brain. He didn't need to even draw them. Here's a quote from his autobiography. I needed no models, drawings, or experiments. I could picture them all as real in my mind. Thus, I have been led unconsciously to evolve what I consider a new method of materializing inventive concepts and ideas, which is radically opposite to the purely experimental, and is, in my opinion, ever so much more expeditious and efficient. Mm-hmm. The moment one constructs a device to carry into practice a crude idea, he finds himself unavoidably engrossed with the details of the apparatus. As he goes on improving and reconstructing, his force of concentration diminishes and he loses sight of the great underlying principle. Results may be obtained, but always at the sacrifice of quality. My method is different. I do not rush into actual work. When I get an idea, I start at once building it up in my imagination. I change the construction, make improvements, and operate the device in my mind. It is absolutely immaterial to me whether I run my turbine in thought or test it in my shop.
Fuck.
I even note if it is out of balance. There is no difference whatever. The results are the same. In this way, I am able to rapidly develop and perfect a conception without touching anything. When I have gone so far as to embody in the invention every possible improvement I can think of and see no fault anywhere,
right.
I put into concrete form this final product of my brain. Invariably, my device works as I conceived that it should, and the experiment comes out exactly as I planned it. In 20 years, there has not been a single exception. Why should it be otherwise? Engineering, electrical and mechanical, is positive in results. There is scarcely a subject that cannot be examined beforehand from the available theoretical and practical data. The carrying out into practice of a crude idea, as is being generally done, is, I hold, nothing but a waste of energy, money and time.
Do you want to know what I just heard? He can't draw. He can't draw. Fucking, he can't draw. He's not good at it. He can't do shading. He can't do perspective. He can't do, he fucking can't draw. No, but seriously, to build an experiment, pretty cool, but wasteful and it costs a lot of money. To draw and to think things through your drawing is pretty impressive, let's be honest, because it's just imagination, ink, and paper. That's pretty cool, and considering the times, that was pretty efficient of Leonardo. Now you get this other motherfucker comes along and says, no, don't even need paper, don't need ink. I just then ponder. I just sit on the toilet, and I just think things through bit by bit. Yes, that's impressive, but not too many people can do that. For the rest of us, we need Leonardo drawing his zoomed-in, layered views of his machines broken down into various pieces, explaining how each one of them works. So it's still an amazing thing that is a gift to the rest of the world, because that's what engineers are going to do from now on, because we all can't be fucking Tesla. Sorry.
Well, this, by the way, is why when Edison died, did I read out that quote before?
I loved it. I can't remember what show that was.
Yeah, me either. But he said Edison was a hack because he had to build things to see if
over
they worked.
Yeah,
he had to do like 1,000 different attempts to get a filament working for a light bulb. I did it first time.
Yeah,
just,
boom.
I just thought about it. Did it. Like, yeah. It's a fucking hack. You know who else is a hack?
Who?
Spielberg. Steven Spielberg, man.
Is he?
Fox.
Could you explain?
Fox has made me watch the first 4 Jurassic Park films recently. The first one is great.
Yeah, yeah. Life Finds a Way.
2.
Right.
Which Spielberg directed. Piece of crap. 3, 4, they get worse and worse and worse. I know Spielberg didn't direct the last ones, but he's producing them.
But he got paid.
He's involved in them. Terrible.
Yeah.
God.
Just let it go.
Jurassic Park films are where screenwriters go to die. It's just, if you have no ideas, you're on your deathbed, you just get roped into a Jurassic Park sequel. Oh, yeah. God, they're terrible.
He probably got $1 million. But anyway, yeah.
Like Tesla, Leo wanted to understand how to harness energy. So he studied. And he also studdled and stuttered while he studied.
Studied
how each human muscle worked so he could calculate its power, figure out how to leverage it for something like a flying machine. If you're going to be the world's first superhero, as Leonardo intended, you need to understand how energy and power works. And to me, this is the classic example of scientific thinking. He knew that any object, how it worked, was the sum of its parts. So he broke them down, human and machine, part by part, and tried to fully understand how the parts work individually. This is like a reductionist view of how things work, which was, a new kind of thinking in its time. Okay, if I can understand how the pieces work, I can probably understand, A, how the full object works, and B, I can understand how to make other things that will work. Brilliant. And he also worked out many practical applications in his lifetime for harnessing power, and particularly, like a lot of people in his day, was obsessed with using water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously,
right.
Water wheels and things like that go back to ancient Greece.
Yeah.
They were using water wheels. You know, 500 BCE, they were using water wheels. Wow. But he was trying to figure out how to harness the Arno River in Florence.
Yeah.
Sawmills, wool cleaning machines, paper mills, hammers for forges, flour mills, knife grinding and sharpening, burnishing arms, manufacture of gunpowder, the silk spinning power of 100 women. Wow.
Yeah.
Ribbon weaving, shaping vases made from jasper, etc. These were all things he thought he could do by harnessing the Arno River in Florence. And you know, he was basically... He was working on the Industrial Revolution.
Yes,
he
was all on
just,
his own.
250 years before it finally happened.
Right. Which is standard.
He was trying to figure out how to use more and more machines to replace human and animal labor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why should we be busting our butts? People get old. They get tired. They have to eat. They have to sleep. They get sick. They die. It's very inconvenient, especially with the plague coming along. If you can have a river, as long as it's flowing, why would you not want to harness that power for all these machines? And, you know, in fact, I'm a little disappointed in Leo. If he can think about using a moving river, how come he's not inventing solar panels? Maybe he did. We haven't got to it. It's in the next chapter. I have no idea. But again, this is pretty impressive of him to go, we should be able to harness, again, as long as the river doesn't dry up, we should be able to harness this and literally change so many lives, produce so much more, so much more quickly and cheaper. And there's got to be a buck to be made in this somewhere. But again, he sees the potential for this.
And, you know, I think that it's very much in line with my own thinking on this. I've been trying to figure out how to utilize the energy of the Brisbane River.
Right.
To replace you as a podcast host. I've spent years working on this.
Do you want some help?
Well, yes.
Okay.
Do you know anyone
could
help?
No. That hurt. No, you take all the sound clips, you tie it up to a machine, and the machine is powered by the Brisbane River or whatever it's called there. That's the best I can come up with. Was that the one where the bridge lit up in the various colors? That was very pretty. Was that Brisbane?
The bridge? Yeah, all the bridges light up in colors. Every bridge in the world lights up in colors.
We don't have any bridges. Again, trees and cows and one red light. We don't have any bridges here. It was my first bridge. Mm. Anyway, it was pretty cool.
It's your first
bridge.
Yeah. By the way, thank you for the birthday wishes and the gift that you sent.
Yeah.
And I'd like to thank all the audience who sent me gifts.
Yeah.
Let's see. There was...
I got nothing. I was going to resend back the gift you got me.
But you didn't even do that. Even go to that much trouble. No. 8 years we've been doing this.
Has it been 8 years?
When I met you, you were living in a wet brown paper bag in a gutter.
Yes.
I lifted you up.
Yes.
I extended my hand. I lifted you up. Come with me if you want to live, I said. Yes.
And now.
Now look at you.
It's a plastic bag. Much nicer. Much nicer.
I was going to go with like a milk crate. You've got a milk crate in the gutter.
Yeah, a fancy one. You know what?
8 years of work, that's nothing to be sniffed at.
Here's what I've learned. There is no way I could pay you back for all that you've done for me. So why even try? Anyway, so why even try? It's like throwing a pebble into the Grand Canyon.
What?
Wouldn't even matter.
What can you give to the man who already has everything, really, is what you thought.
Pretty much. So where were we?
Leonardo designed a machine to grind needles.
Oh, good. That's a big deal.
Now, This would use human power. It wasn't powered by a river, but it would use human power to revolve a turntable, which was attached to small grinding gears and polishing strips. He figured that with 100 machines being operated by 100 monkeys, he could produce 40,000 needles an hour.
Right.
Which he would then sell for 5 soldi each, making him rich. Yes. We're going to be rich, Jerry, rich.
Yes. Show me the money. Sorry. Yes.
Now,
yes.
Two interesting things, though, out of this story. Number one is, in his notebook, he did the maths to figure out how rich he was going to be.
Right.
This is a notebook from 1496.
This is dream board.
He figured that at that rate, he'd make 60,000 ducats a year.
Shit.
120 soldi to a ducat. Now, according to Walter Isaacson in his biography, Leonardo got the maths not just wrong, but 10 times wrong. A factor of 10 wrong. He would have actually made 6,000 ducats a year.
Still.
I couldn't figure out how to replicate that. If you do 40,000 needles an hour,
right?
How many hours and how many days are you working?
Yeah.
To produce those for a year, it seems like you make a lot more than 60,000 ducats even. But anyway, Isaacson's point is that Leonardo wasn't good at maths.
Not his.
He was.
Thing.
He was smart.
Oh yeah.
He was a smart dude. Don't get me wrong.
Brainy Cove.
But
right.
Like Steven Spielberg,
some
bit of a hack.
Some
at
things.
Times. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
But even 6,000 ducats a year would have made him wealthy. So what happened? Well, that's the other part of the story.
Yes.
He didn't do it. Didn't do it.
Wait.
He.
Yeah.
Do you know why he wouldn't do it?
No, please tell me.
Because he was a lazy motherfucker. That's why I've come to this conclusion. Leonardo da Vinci was the most brilliant, lazy motherfucker who ever lived.
God.
You know, he could he had great ideas, but as soon as something involved work,
oh, I'm out.
He'd be like, oh, fuck, so really?
He pulled
really?
A Ray.
Work?
Brilliant, but
lazy
as fuck.
Yeah, well, you know.
So
let
me. We have to stop here because this touches on what you just said. So Leonardo comes up with something. And he does the math wrong, which is pretty astounding in itself. So he thinks he's going to make roughly, you know, in 2017 money, he's going to make about $8 million a year. All he's got to do is finish up the project, get out there and sell it. Because even Florence alone, with all the weaving that's going on and clothes making, he would have been rich. He would have been so rich, he never would have had to have done anything he didn't want to do. He wouldn't have had to paint for any of these bitches. He would have been able to paint because he wanted to. He could have just gotten high and followed the dragonflies all day long, every day for the rest of his life.
Fucked little boys' asses all his life. All,
but the
every
point,
day, nothing.
But we've said this a billion times. This is what astounded me. I could finish this up a little bit and make what I think is going to be $8 million a year. But I've already figured out how it works. In my drawings and in my head, I can see how the needles would be made and they'd be to a degree mass produced. I get that. But I'd have to finish it up and I'd have to, you know, put a underline under it. That's not his thing. As long as he figures it out, that part of his brain is satisfied and it moves on to the next thing. It doesn't matter that there is supposedly $8 million a year attached to it. Doesn't fucking matter to him. He's just going to go on to the next thing. Money does not move this man. He's astounding.
Yeah, but see, that's what they say, but I think this is bullshit.
Is that too generous? That's too generous.
Yeah.
He's lazy as fuck.
Barry and Stan came up with that story to put a positive spin on it. Well, look.
He's a genius.
The reason he's not...
Right.
The reason he's not doing these things, finishing these paintings, finishing these sculptures...
Here we go.
You know, building these airplanes building these fucking things.
Flying machines.
Yeah, well, it's not because he's lazy.
No.
It's just because he's a genius and he's just thinking about the... Fucking bullshit.
Right.
Bottom line is, lazy cunt is what he was. Leonardo, the lazy cunt. He was like, oh, fuck, I have to work.
I gotta do this.
But okay, he's like, he's going, on one hand, I could work, make a lot of money.
Right.
The other hand,
I could
just get my dick sucked all day by young boys.
I know what I choose.
Work, dick sucked, worked, dick sucked.
Work, suck,
go with
work,
the dick sucking.
Suck, work, I think, suck, I choose suck. Yeah, yeah.
You'll suck crack.
But Barry and Stan.
Is this show? What show was Neil Suck Crack on?
Oh,
it's a Cold War show, I think. I don't know.
Anyways, Barry and Stan had to take out when he did, because this is actual phrase of his. He said, "What I want is for other people to work really, really hard and give me the money." They're like, "Dude, you can't fucking." We've talked about
it. It's basically
this.
Your business
yes,
model.
You can't. You yeah. can't pull a Ray. Ray's got that locked down. You got to come up with something
yeah.
else.
But, he was just looking for his cam. He was looking for his cam. I need to find somebody who'll do all the work.
Okay.
And give me all the money. That's just...
Who's the pimp and who's the whore here? In this analogy.
Yeah. I'm going to buy you a big hat.
With the
velvet,
feather in it.
A velvet coat.
I'm a pimp named Slickback. Yeah. And you have to say the full title.
Pimp Daddy. Yeah, my
a pimp called... Yeah. Anyway. So anyways.
Pimp Daddy.
But, so he came across an idea to make a lot of money, and for whatever reason, again, he did not pursue it for whatever reason. But at least we get masterful paintings out of it because he had to keep working for somebody.
Yeah. Right? How many masterful paintings do we have?
What, 2.5?
20.
20? Yeah. But all 20. Are all of
20,
them
20
that,
pieces of art.
That good?
And
really?
Most of them aren't finished.
Yeah.
Well, he also came up with the first law of motion 200 years before slacker Isaac Newton got around to it.
That sounds right.
He wrote, "A body in motion desires to maintain its course in the line from which it started. Every movement tends to maintain itself. Or rather, every body in motion continues to move so long as the influence of the force that set it in motion is maintained in it."
Right.
So, you know, he developed this because he was trying to figure out why he was so lazy.
Why can't
he was
I get
like, well,
some momentum going here? I just don't give a fuck.
I'm just gonna keep going in this direction. You know, until, going and doing something, it would require me to go, change a direction. And
that's not me. I'm not gonna.
I'm a body in motion. I'm just maintaining my course, which is getting my dick sucked.
So I have to ask, so he comes up with, he discovers what Newton is going to discover 200 years later, the first law of motion, and he's only doing...
Well, Newton didn't discover it. Newton just read it in Leonardo da Vinci's notebook
and
that
went,
he saw, and he went, oh, okay.
And he changed
it. Anyone ever heard of, the first law? No?
No.
Okay, it's mine. You know,
dibs.
Yeah. He did the three times thing. You know the three times rule? I always use this. It's like... The first time you use a quote, you say, well, as Ray Harris always says.
Right.
And the second time you use it, you say, as someone said.
Beautiful.
And the third time you use it, you say, as I've always said.
As I've always
said. And so.
Stated. Yes.
So that's what Newton did. He
brilliant.
Just, you know.
Because the only thing I had was Newton changed the Italian into English and shortened the sentence and made it a little more concise. And then that's the same fucking thing. But we have to remember, when Leo stumbles across this, he's only doing it because he's not looking for this. He's looking for trying to figure out objects and momentum and all that other stuff, because it's one of these things where he's trying to find something else. This is just a discovery along the way of his path. It's not what he set out to do. Again, just... absolutely staggering, but lazy genius, again, beating Newton by 200 years.
In the 1490s, he spent a lot of time trying to work out how to build a perpetual motion machine.
Oh, I wrote love machine.
Now, this was...
Oh, shit, hold on. Go ahead.
This was a big thing at the time, you know, along with alchemy, which Newton was also into.
Right.
Perpetual motion machines is something that humans have been trying to figure out how to build for centuries and centuries and centuries. The idea, of course, being, you know, it runs itself.
Yes.
Doesn't need powers a new itself. Source of energy.
Yeah.
Powers itself. Yeah. And, you know, he, like everyone else, was trying to figure out how to prevent the energy of the object from sort of being used up when it's running.
Right.
He studied lots of different ways in his notebooks to make this happen. Looked at lots of different mechanisms, wheels with hammers on hinges that would swing out when their part of the wheel was heading down, and then swing back to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
Spiral screws that formed a double helix, curved compartments on a wheel with bowls that roll to the lowest point when they're heading downward.
Yeah,
he came up with lots of different ideas using water, in a coiled tube known as an Archimedes screw, which would carry water upward and then continue turning the screw as it flows back downwards.
That was cool.
But, you know, he, like everyone else, eventually gave up. He wrote, "Descending water will never rise from its resting place, an amount of water equal to its weight. Among the impossible delusions of man is the search for continuous motion, called by some perpetual wheel," he wrote. "Speculators on perpetual motion, how many vain chimeras you have created in this quest." Wow. Now,
yes.
Fast forward 400 years.
Right.
You ever hear of an Irish company called Stjorn?
Stjorn, no. No. Is that a drink? No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, probably now. I followed these guys really carefully at the time. They blasted into the internetosphere in 2006.
Right.
The claiming that they had developed a perpetual motion machine.
Oh, wow.
Now, or perpetual energy device, mm-hmm. anyway. Now, the first tip should have been that they're Irish. I mean, when have the Irish invented anything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Possible.
And leprechauns. If it was a leprechaun, if it was powered by leprechauns, then we would have believed it. But really, look, and I'm Irish. So I can say
it's
this.
It's okay. You can say it. Yeah.
The only things the Irish have invented were potato famines, alcoholism,
yeah.
and pots of gold
right.
At the end of a rainbow. That's,
exactly.
That's yeah. pretty much it for Irish contributions to civilization.
One out of three.
Stjorn raised 23 million euro.
I like this.
From a list of very high profile, high society investors. Their product was called the Orbo.
Right.
The CEO, Sean McCarthy, said, "What we have developed..." No, he said this is... To be sure. "What we have developed is a way to construct magnetic fields. So that when you travel around the magnetic fields, starting and stopping at the same position, you've gained energy."
Yes. Hmm.
So they claimed 8 independent scientists had tested it and decided it was legit. There was a fair amount of skepticism.
Sure.
Outside of that. So they said they would put together a jury of independent scientists to prove it wrong.
Irish scientists.
They said, like, any scientist can submit their name. We'll pick a bunch of people and, you can
love
study it.
Magnets.
Yeah. And so this, yeah, magnets. And because one of the devices they said it would power a mobile phone. Wouldn't require any energy. You just plug it into your mobile phone and it would just magnetic fields, charge your mobile phone. Anyway.
Do they have Charlie on board?
So they put together.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
Charlie.
From
Charlie Work.
He's the one who.
Sonny.
He put on his dating profile that his hobby was magnets. Do you do anything with them? No, I just like magnets. Sorry.
Hey, look.
It's frozen up. I can't see. Oh, whoa.
Is it my mind?
Magnets?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Magnets.
What are you,
yeah.
Charlie Jr.?
And I've got a thing that my boys gave me for my birthday. I can't show. I could show you if I get the camera down. Can you see?
Oh, I see it. Yeah.
You see that?
I see a plant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plugged
it's
in.
It's levitating on a platform.
Get the
spinning.
Is that magnets?
If I
magnets?
If I get that, there's nothing underneath it. Yeah. It's magnetic levitation.
Oh,
it's been running for a week. It just cool. levitates. It just spins and levitates. It's so fucking cool.
So
man.
Is that why you feel like you're a god or a god? Not
yeah.
godlike.
Yeah, just a god, not the god. Yeah.
So we know the Irish aren't going to use water because Leonardo proved hundreds of years ago you can't use water. So boom, bippity boppity boo, magnets.
Magnets. So they put together this jury of independent scientists to prove them wrong. And the independent scientist said, yeah, you're wrong. And in 2016, they went into liquidation.
It's tough.
Now, my little spinning pot here, I had Caligula spinning in it until I bought this plant.
Oh, cool.
It will spin forever, but it's plugged into a wall. So
there's
it's,
a power source. Yeah.
Yes.
Independent.
It's getting power.
Or yeah. dependent. Yeah. So we're still looking. It's not magnets. It's not water.
Yeah.
Magnetized water, wet magnets. I don't know. Go ahead.
Leonardo figured out why, too, perpetual motion machines can't work. He was, again, way ahead of his time with this. He concocted a set of experiments with heavy objects moving down a slope and discovered the basics of how friction works. Again, hundreds of years ahead of his time. He discovered that there were three determinants of friction: the weight of the object, the smoothness or roughness of the surface, and the steepness of the incline of the surface.
Makes sense.
And he was one of the first people to figure out that friction was dependent on the weight, not the area of contact between the object and the surface.
Does that seem counterintuitive to you?
It does. Yeah. It does. And that's why everyone assumed that it was about surface area.
The more touching, the more friction. And he said, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is what you told me in Vegas. The more touching, the more friction.
More touching.
Yeah, you said put both hands on it. And I said, seriously, like I'm holding it between two fingers. I really,
just
I'm
do
not
it.
Sure I could get
fucking
even a third
me.
Finger on there.
God.
Now, there's this thing called, like he did this with a brick. If Leonardo did this with a brick, you can see the drawings of it in his notebooks. If you get a brick and put it on its largest side.
Right.
And you pull it down a slope. Then you flip it on its narrower side and pull it down a slope. Same amount of friction.
Because the incline and the weight is the same.
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant.
Yes. It's all about the weight and the incline and the roughness of the surface.
Amazing.
Now, he wrote, the friction made by the same weight will be of equal resistance at the beginning of its movement, although the contact may be of different breadths and lengths.
Wow.
Now, this was huge, but he never published his findings, of course, because he didn't publish anything. 200 years later, a Frenchman, Guillaume Amonton, again, like Newton, just read Leonardo's notebooks pretended these were his own idea.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever heard about the friction? Oh, no. Oh, okay, then.
Good. Good for me.
Now, fun fact about Amonton is he went deaf as a child. Well, probably wasn't a fun fact for him, but he went deaf as a child. Sorry.
Fun fact.
I should have got him to watch that Marketing the Messiah review I saw before that was in sign language, and I didn't know what he was saying.
I just pulled it back.
When he published his laws of friction in 1699, everyone laughed at him, but it didn't matter because he was deaf. Jacques is on you, monsieur. I cannot hear you laughing at me. To me, I'm assuming that you're applauding me and saying I'm a massive genius. So, fuck you all.
Merci. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Merde.
That's two for two.
Almost 100 years later, another Frenchman, Charles-Augustin de Coulombe,
could he
in 1781.
Right.
He could, and that's people took him seriously. And they're like, well, listen, I'm not taking a deaf guy seriously. Come on. Well, see,
give me a French
this
guy
is
who
France.
Can fucking hear. That's right. God.
Now, do you know what the science of friction is called, Ray?
Oh, I should know this. Frictionometry. No, I don't know. Please tell me. Rubbiology. Rub it on me, baby. No, I don't know.
Very close. Tribology.
What? That's lame. Get Stan and Barry.
Coming
on
from
that.
The Greek word tribo, I rub.
Okay.
Which is why when two lesbians rub their clits together, it's called tribbing.
Right. Or libo.
Now,
I
highly recommend that you Google tribbing, and that'll be the rest of your night. It's
2 minutes.
And if your wife walks in, you just go, hey,
science
I'm
here.
Studying Leonardo da Vinci.
I'm
bricks,
science
ba-
here,
I'm just
bitch.
Looking for.
All right.
I'm looking for brick videos. I thought these lesbians were going to do a scientific experiment involving bricks. I mean, what? How?
That comes later.
How am I supposed to know?
Later. Yeah, yeah. Could you get me a tissue and a cup of water? Thank you.
One? Yeah.
What? Yeah, that's all I need. Where were we?
If three bricks are pulled across the table,
right,
the friction is three times greater than if one brick is pulled. And now, in order to work all this out, Leonardo got a handful of bricks, two lesbians,
and a leprechaun.
Wait, that was a
right.
That was a dream I had last night. No way, hold
on. I bet.
And most nights, right. Actually.
Good yeah. stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah. 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 Lesbians and bricks.
What?
Now, in order to measure
right.
the amount of friction,
right,
he devised an instrument now known as a tribometer.
Of course he did.
Which would not be reinvented until the 18th century.
Yes.
Using this tribometer, he was able to measure
right.
what we now call the coefficient of friction, the ratio between the force it takes to move one surface over another and the pressure between the two surfaces. And for a piece of wood sliding over another piece of wood, he calculated this ratio as 0.25, which apparently is spot on.
Right. So again, didn't set out to do this, but he needed to know, have an idea of the amount of friction. So invents, creates, and builds a device to measure that very thing. And then he probably threw it in the trash and moved on from there.
I could get rich if I marketed this. It would involve having to work.
You know how many lesbians and brick owners would buy this from me? Tons.
Get back to my lesbians. He also found that if he lubricated the incline.
Right. Oh, right.
He reduced the friction, so he was one of the first engineers to include points for right. the insertion of oil into all of his mechanical devices.
Oh, my God.
And
yeah.
on his cock. Yeah, was,
thank God for Leo.
Where he was butt-fucking
right.
12-year-old boys.
Yeah. I need something. Anyway, so again, we sit here and we think of lubrication like, duh. No. You got to stop and go, this guy thought of that. No one was doing it. And he's like, huh, okay. I'm going to start putting little, access ways or pinholes or whatever the proper term is, so I can squeeze some oil into my machines so they keep running smoothly and that doesn't increase the friction and maybe something breaks down. Absolutely brilliant. And he's just figuring this out along the way.
Yeah. He also figured out how to use ball bearings and roller bearings
Jeez.
In his machines, things that weren't commonly used until the late 1800s.
This is all in 1 week, right? He's figuring this out just one way. It's just
figuring this out. Yeah. In his Codex Madrid, which is mostly about machines, he drew a new type of screw jack, one of those devices in which a big screw is turned to push a heavy object upwards.
Right.
These ended up being widely used in the 15th century. Mm. One drawback is that there's a lot of friction when a heavy load is pressing down. So his solution, which was the first of its kind, was to put some ball bearings between the plate and the gear, which he drew in an exposed view.
Right.
Did you see that?
Yes. Fucking.
Amazing. An open, what do you call it? Like an open cut view of it to demonstrate how it works. Then he has a closer schematic to the left of that. He writes, if a weight of a flat surface moves on a similar surface, its movement will be facilitated by interposing balls or rollers between them. Mm. If the balls or rollers touch each other in their motion, they will make the movement more difficult than if there were no contact between them, because when they touch, the friction causes a contrary motion and the movements counteract each other. But if the balls or rollers are kept at a distance from each other, it will be easy to generate this movement.
That's incredible.
And then he drew lots of pictures of how this works. He worked out that three balls are better than four because three points define a plane.
Right.
The fourth ball may get out of alignment with the three. So if you can just have three touching a flat surface, like that's better. I've personally always said three balls are better than four. Been a lot of friction with my balls in the last couple of weeks, but I'm happy to say that, I'm happy to say that they're feeling a lot. I put a lot of oil on them.
Good,
and,
good.
They're feeling a lot better
and
today.
Peas and Thank carrots. You. So put balls in between to reduce the friction, figure out the number of balls, but then make sure the balls don't touch because it will actually increase the friction and something will break down. I mean, this guy is just, and he's writing all this stuff down, but does he tell anybody? Is he publishing it? Is he passing it on? Is he going to an engineer? No, it just scribbles it and goes
because
on.
Because he's
to the next
not thing. Only lazy, he's selfish motherfucker. Fuck everybody. I know these all my inventions can
me.
Make the world a better place.
Yeah,
fuck everyone. Fuck what's anyone done for me lately?
That's right.
Hey, did I tell you already what Fox called the frozen peas I put on my balls?
No.
Please God. He said, "Mom, we don't need to eat those penis peas, do we? We're not going to make me eat the penis peas."
I think he's got a career in podcasting. In fact, I think he's ready now. Yeah.
When I'm finished with them, which I think I am now, I'm going to actually cook them and put them in a shape of a dick and balls on his plate.
There you go.
And just make them into the thing. And,
I mean, clearly.
So there's your dinner.
He's going to need therapy later on. You might as well get your money's worth. So, yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. I think that's, So. I just have to I'm sorry, I didn't want to cut you off. Were you going to go more on about his balls?
No.
Okay. So, of course, we're talking about Leonardo here. Do you think he's done? No, he's not done, because to come up with balls is one thing, but he's also the first person to mix different metals together to come up with the best balls to reduce friction. So he writes, it should be 3 parts of copper and 7 of 10 melted together, which was similar to the alloy that he was using to make mirrors. So first put the balls in, make sure they're the best balls, and you can only probably guess what goes next. We'll go into that in a moment. But the point is, he got an award, and the award for the best balls goes to Master Leonardo with his 3 balls. But again, this guy is absolutely just staggering me in these chapters with his brilliance and his inventions. And this stuff won't be reproduced for hundreds of years later.
Yeah, historian of technology called Ladislao Reti, who played a role in publishing the Madrid codices in 1965, said Leonardo's formula gives a perfectly working anti-friction composition.
Is this,
so there you go. 3 parts copper, 7 parts tin.
Is this where you tell me about another deaf Frenchman?
Yeah, Loretti.
So who comes up with, who gets credit for the balls? Because clearly it's not Leonardo.
Yeah, well, the anti-friction alloy is usually credited to an American inventor, Isaac Babbitt.
Yes.
Who patented an alloy containing copper, tin, and antimony in 1839.
Good God.
So Leonardo, 300 years ahead
and
of his time.
Right.
At least. Yeah. 350 years. So, like, there's no end to this motherfucker's laziness. Like, think about how the world could have been improved by anti-friction ball bearings for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Nah.
No.
I could do this.
Can't be fucked.
Nah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah, no.
Nah.
It's in it for
Take
me.
Take work.
Even if there is something in it for me, I don't want to do it. I do not want to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where were we at?
I think we should do an exhibition.
Right.
Next time we go to Florence,
yes,
we should speak to the Florence council government about doing an exhibition called Laziest Motherfucker Who Ever Lived, Leonardo da Vinci. Because I think it's inspiring to the kids. Like, it's one
role
thing.
Model.
They think, because you look at Leonardo and you go, oh, he's this great genius.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, I can't paint like that. I can't invent like that. I can't.
Right.
No,
matter.
That's the wrong takeaway.
Doesn't matter.
The takeaway is he was a lazy, selfish motherfucker.
Yeah.
And, you know, still did okay. He had a good job.
Yeah.
People remember him
Worked
500
out.
Years later.
Yeah.
You too.
Yeah.
Can be remembered for all of history and still be a lazy, selfish motherfucker. That's the That's the lesson here.
Here's what we should take away from Leonardo. Do the absolute minimum so you don't
I think
have
you've
to.
You've already got that nailed down, buddy. You've worked this out a long time ago.
Can I finish? Please. Do the absolute minimum so you don't starve to death, and you will increase your time to chase almost all the dragonflies you want. That would be my speech on whenever I win
and
an
young
award.
Ass.
And just
Young boy ass.
Young boy. Well, the dragonfly was code for young boy ass, but I think sweet, all the white people knew.
Sweet young boy ass.
Oh, good stuff.
Tight. Yeah.
Don't forget to bring your balls. Yes. That's work too.
Through his work on all of this stuff, machinery, he's actually developing a mechanistic view of how the world works. Like Newton would hundreds of years later. Everything.
Yes.
In the universe. Everything that moves, everything that lives, everything that operates. He figured out that they all operate according to the same basic laws. And that you can see patterns in these laws from one domain to another domain. The same basic laws operate everything. He kind of figured this out through observation and experimentation.
That's amazing.
You know, we've talked before about he realized when he was trying to work out how birds fly that they use the motion of the wind, and that the motion of wind resembled the motion of water.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, what's the common underlying laws that cause water and air to work?
Right.
You know, he was doing, you know, particle theory hundreds and 500 years before anyone else was really thinking along these lines. He wrote, no, he didn't write. Another guy wrote, Mario Chianchi, some deaf Italian, wrote, man is a machine, a bird is a machine, the whole universe is a machine.
This whole universe is a machine. Yeah, that was my Al Pacino. But yeah. No,
that's pretty good. That was I got that. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. So yeah,
although you were doing you were doing late Al Pacino, not young.
That's true,
because that's 1981 Al Pacino. Was this whole quarter's out of order,
right? Was that when he started to phone it, right before he started to phone in all his movies?
No, because he did Scarface.
Okay,
around about that time.
Oh, well, I stand corrected. I guess it
was
career.
Scent of a Woman was around about the time he started. Right. He got an Academy Award, and he was like, "I'm 95,000. I got what I came for."
I mean, I'll take the script and I'll read it, and you'll pay me, but it will be over the phone and just CGI.
And then I'll just
or stunt double
do this big voice.
So go.
Hey, listen, I won't hear any smack talk about Al Pacino. No,
I love Al Pacino.
He is a god.
He is.
You know, I would have his children.
I could only hope I will never do. No. Yeah. So, but going back to Leo, so whether it's humans, whether it's animals, whether it's machines, water, wind, whatever, they're all controlled by the same laws that govern nature and govern the universe. Fucker probably wrote something like that down, didn't tell anybody, didn't want to lift up anybody, you know, didn't want to help anybody or lift up humankind. Fuck him. Fuck them. So, and he just goes on with his life. Dick move, Leo. That's all I'm saying.
He was leading, one of the people leading Europe into a new scientific age, and he ridiculed anyone who didn't have a mechanistic view of the world, of cause and effect. You know, he basically said, look, leave religion and miracles to the priests, astrologers, alchemists, all these sorts of people he thought were, speaking of Newton, were just nonsense. They weren't critical thinkers.
Yeah.
And this, you know, and I deal with this all the time today too. Like,
oh yeah,
this is still
every Thursday.
You know,
night.
The whole free will thing.
Yeah,
the whole three illusions, no free will thing.
Right.
You know, people, and even people that consider themselves atheists and critical thinkers and scientific thinkers, when it comes to issues like lack of free will, they still get stuck on this sort of superstitious thinking.
Yes.
When you try and explain to somebody, well, thoughts are the properties of the brain. The brain is made of chemicals. Chemicals obey the laws of chemistry. Therefore, all of your thoughts and decisions are 100% of the time the product of the laws of chemistry just playing out. People go, that's reductionist thinking.
God.
Yeah, it is reductionist thinking, because that's how shit works, motherfucker. Right. It's reductionist. Like, there's no alternative to that. It's just, you know, even in scientific journals like Scientific American, et cetera, at least once a year I'll see an article.
Right.
Maybe this is the explanation for free will. Maybe. No. There's no fucking, never going to be an explanation for free will.
Processes. Processes.
Just stop chemistry. Trying to come up with magical. Oh, thank you, baby. Ah, you're still here? My God, it's 20 to 10.
Oh, my goodness.
You're supposed to be at school like an hour ago.
She's skipping
you
school.
Tell me what to do.
Oh, snap. Is she waiting for the bus? No.
The short bus.
Yeah, but going back for a second to Leonardo, I mean, he's right. He's like, you know, when it comes to religious stuff, they're priests. We really can't trash them too much because they can probably have us burned at the stake or make our lives miserable. But he did find ways to pick at them. And very few people know this. Thursday night comedy stand up. He'd go up and he'd do a routine. First, he'd do, like, you know, you can never find the second pair of socks coming out of the dryer, which he invented, by the way. But then he'd always end with the same joke. And the fucking people loved it. He would always go, what do you call a gathering of priests? A molestation. It killed. It killed. Thank you. Good night. And he would just go.
Drop the mic, which he also invented.
Yes. Yeah. And he invented the mic drop itself. But anyway.
And that's the show.